very interesting introduction. Very often I hear myself introduced and I feel so unworthy of it for the simple reason that my life with Baba I take as a kind of meditation. While driving down Dansit, you could speak of your life with Baba. When I sit back and think of my life with Baba, to me it has been every situation, every act has been a kind of teaching. And when I say teaching, I mean the emphasis that Meher Baba places on this very simple statement, I have come not to teach, but to awaken. Not to teach, but to awaken. The situation he puts us in our everyday life, becomes a teaching. For him, an awakening. For us, a teaching. To be present at this gathering, I love this word. I'm so happy all of you titled this group as a gathering. Because after all, we gather in his love. And if you were under any impressions that I would be sharing hardcore intellectual dialectics, please banish them from your mind. Because talking about Baba is simply sharing. I remember way back in 1972, I was on the Berkeley campus, the University of California, and after my talk, a young man with long hair, flowing beard, the ribbon on his head, stood up and called out to me and said, "You're the devil. You're speaking about the devil. You are a propagator. You want to convert us. Go away, go back to your country." And in such moments, Baba gives me a lot of strength. And I said, "Would you listen to what I have to say? And then you can call me names. Any, whatever you want to call me. When you see a beautiful play or a film, you obviously go and tell your people at home. You share it with them. Similarly, I'm here to share. Ultimately, it is between you and God. It is ultimately your relationship between you and God. I am nobody to tell you to follow this master or that master or even follow God. I have had a beautiful experience and I would simply like to share it. That is all. And that is why when Dan said that I am a speaker, I feel so unworthy of it because all I do is share in his love." Last week, I met a young Baba lover in New York. And I thought to myself that I must mention this to the group in Washington because 33 years back today, Meher Baba was practically beginning the new life. Technically speaking, the new life started on October 16, 1949. But Meher Baba had already taken his mandali through the period of preparation, through the period of training, initial training and preparing them for a hard life. In our eyes, a life of renunciation, but what Baba termed the life of Satyanashi. It's an untranslatable word. But nashi means annihilation, effacement. When we look back on the new life, we think of the blueprint that Meher Baba planned out for us to follow. A life of effacement, a life of renunciation. Of what kind? I will tell you in a moment. But if I'd like to get back to this young man who I met last week, an American. He was a stockbroker and did very good, very well at the exchange. Years went by, made money, bought cars and all the things that go with success. One fine morning, the exchange crashed. He lost a lot of money. And unfortunately, he concluded that Meher Baba was responsible for it. He was a Baba lover, very devoted Baba lover. So he gave away his paintings, and he gave away his pictures, his books, everything. He didn't want to have anything to do with Baba. I was very moved with the story, and that's why I'm sharing it with you. He went and told Baba lovers that I would love to meet you, but on the condition that never a mention about Baba should be made in my presence. But of course, he drifted away from them. He wouldn't contact them. The story was directed by the man himself, which makes it stranger still. Years went by, and soon after this thing happened, he had to do something to make a living. So he said to himself, well, I've had some legal training, I might as well become a lawyer. And he, of course, trained himself to be a lawyer and went through school and did his training and apprenticeship and the rest of it. And became a successful lawyer in the area. Once again acquired his cars and bought his house and all the accoutrements that go with success. Became a dealer in rare coins and things like that. When somebody who had his old address sent him a flyer and was going through his mail, he opened up this and he saw it was a flyer for Tales from the New Life. So, for that split moment, his past came rushing back to him. And he said, Tales from the New Life. New Life? I've read Baba's books, but New Life? Oh, what good was a New Life? Something new. So he says, for a lark, let me send for the book. And he sent for this book. He read the book. When it came, Tales from the New Life. And he sat and sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. Because Meher Baba, whom he had denounced and renounced, had led and suffered the kind of life that he had gone through and had entered phase for the new life. In other words, he associated his life with Meher Baba's life, a life of privation which he had gone through, a life of renunciation kind of, which he was forced to go through. And he said, oh my God, what have I done? I have let go of my real self. How will I find it now? How will I want it back. I want it all back. And this is when he took the first step and came back to Baba's fold. I believe that he never left it, but he believed that he had left it. He had drifted. each one of us at some point or the other in our lives go through a phase like that. We're just a few people over here. What do you call it? Living room church? But each one, everyone around walking on the streets, mankind as a whole, as Baba explains, is divided into two parts, God conscious and God unconscious. Fortunate are we who are God conscious, who are here in His presence. But all of us have gone through this phase, through this period of divine desperateness, this period of suffering, where we became conscious of the fact that our lives that we were leading from day to day, our attachments, our pressures, our commitments to mundane living was not enough, and that we wanted to go beyond the limits of those surroundings that we were in. Such a state happened to me way back in the early 60s. In our immature days, when we are mentally immature, when we go through a period of divine desperateness, when we suffer a great deal, longing and yearning for the beloved, Meher Baba was in seclusion. And I was on the verge of appearing for my graduation when cumulative Baba had not permitted me to come to Mirazar. He was in seclusion. I very much longed to be with him. And the entire, my soul was in a state of turmoil. I took paper and pen and wrote to Baba that I was coming to Mirazar the next day after renouncing everything. Renouncing. Renunciation was a very strong feeling with me. I believed at that time that renunciation was the only answer, was the only method for me to assuage, to allay my feelings of longing and yearning which were burning within me. Consequently, I sent him a letter amidst tears and amidst crying and smudged letters and tears on them, and I don't even remember what I had written, but the gist was that I was coming to him by the next train. This happened a day earlier, and I was in my teens, mind you. And I went and got myself photographed with Swami Vivekananda, about to renounce myself so that my parents would have a picture of me. And you know all the drama that goes with it. I thought, what, as it was getting towards evening and next morning I was to leave, I felt that I should tell my parents. At least I owe it to them to tell my mother, not my father. So I told her that if you promise not to tell my father, I have something very important to tell. So I told my mother that this is what my plan was. She was totally taken aback, very happy that I had taken this decision to go to Baba. Very upset that between, she said, I'm very happy if you're going to Baba. fine by all means. But she was worried that in that state of mind between Dehradun and Ahmednagar, I should not go astray. My mind was in such a situation where any Tom, Dick, or Harry of a spiritual master would grab me. This is what her worry was. She also felt that suppose Baba said no, I had told her that if Baba said no, I would sit in a hut on Mirazad Road. So, I'll of course be jumping from one incident to another. As I said, that every situation in my life had had a purpose, had a teaching. So, as the hours went by, midnight, doorbell rings, postman with a telegram. Mayor Baba, renounce nothing but your present attitude. Letter follows. So the first order had already come through. And I said, now there's nothing I can do. But I was in such a state of mind, I said, no way, I'm going to disobey Baba. I'm on my way. I have tickets, bought everything. So I went, waited for my, for the letter to come. And I thought instead of relying on my memory, I'll just read out from, I printed some of these in this little book called The Signal many, many years back. This was actually a couple of poems that I had written to Baba on his birthday, and I had prepared it as a gift on his birthday, this little booklet, in which I had also put Mir Baba's words to Nosh Ruvani. And this is what Baba wrote in the letter. For spiritual aspirants, renunciation is of help. But those who love the avatar and are under his direct guidance do not have to renounce anything. The lovers of the avatar have simply to obey the avatar's instructions and to love him wholeheartedly. Rest assured, one day my grace will be on you to know me as I am. Well, this was fine. The letter continued, appear for your graduation. Those days all I did was write poems on the back of my books and poems after poems to Baba, and I wouldn't study. My parents were worried. But it was Baba's orders to appear and not to worry about the results. He would take care of it. So I appeared for the exams and I got through with second division. But I was still not happy with the situation. So I wrote back to him and I said, I wanted to meditate, keep fast and silence. You know, the kind of little things we do in our love for Baba, thinking that this was one of the methods, this was one of the paths that had to be adopted. All of us do this at some stage or the other. And promptly a reply came. Do not observe prolonged silence nor meditate. Do not serve yourself by doing so. You who lead a dedicated life in my cause have no need for such discipline. You are close to me and you are very dear to me. I know how you strive to be merged in my love. I want you not to strive for this, but to allow your dear love to flow freely to me in its natural course. Know one most important thing in the spiritual line, and that is that no amount of your striving to reach me could transport you to me. Simplest thing for you to do is to just love me in the most natural way, as a child would love his mother, and carry out anything I on my own command you to do. This was the gist of the letter that he wrote to me in reply to this. As days went by, he knew the state of my mind. The agony continued, and I devoted more and more time with Baba, reading his books and shirking my responsibilities. At the same time, avoiding, trying not to go. I was in the army, I was working in the army for 3 years, and trying to evade that issue as well. And my parents were slightly worried about me in terms of Baba not in seclusion, and I would read a lot of other spiritual books. So out of the blue came a letter from Baba. Don't be led astray by any Tom, Dick, Harry of the spiritual master. Beware of such cheap experiences and spiritual stunts of spiritual clowns. Strong language. It was at this time that I read a small news item in the papers which said that the Third World Religions Conference would be held in India. So I promptly wrote to Baba for his permission to attend the conference. I was 19 at that time. This was people from all denominations, from all over the world, were to gather in New Delhi, and the Prime Minister of India was to inaugurate it, and something like 200,000 people attending it. At that time, we were about 5 Baba lovers who had decided to participate. And there were different panels. Like, there was one on education, another one on world peace, and a third one on some aspect about unity and global unity and things like that, war. I decided to opt for the panel on world peace. And I had to give them a subject. So I just gave them a subject, the supervening powers of world peace and the supervening powers of faith in the evolution of world peace, which meant nothing, but I had to give them a subject. So the president of the conference was Muni Sushil Kumar. You may have heard of this name. He is the head of the Jains in the world. And the secretary of the conference was Baron Frary von Blomberg. And the vice president of the conference was Sant Kripal Singh. You must have heard. Have you heard of Sant Kripal Singh? He came and met Baba several times. So I wrote to them and was accepted as a delegate. And I prepared this exhaustive 45-minute speech. It was my first major speech, and I spent days and nights working on it. Prepared a little pamphlet called Meher Baba on World Peace, and the other side was Meher Baba on Love. Printed a large number of copies and took them along with me. That morning, telegram from Baba. I'm with you at the Third World Religions Conference. And there was Amar Singh Sehgal. You've heard of Amar Singh Sehgal. He was a member of parliament, and he had sought permission to recite the master's prayer. See, before the start of the conference, when the prime minister came in, everybody stood up in mass and read out prayers of all the religions. each one came forward, and there was a Zoroastrian, the head of the Zoroastrian community in the world, gave a prayer in Avestic, and the Christian prayer, and the Muslim prayer, and every prayer from every denomination in the world. And the master's prayer was also read out. I mean, it was one of those grand occasions, like the UN kind of thing. So we had this panel where we had, you see, the Jains have two sects, the Swatambara and the Digambara. Well, you have one of them wear a mask where none of the flies and the mosquito wouldn't get into the mouth, because they believe in non-violence to a degree where they don't hurt any creatures or any insects or anything. So it shouldn't go by mistake. The other one is that they go about nude, so completely stark naked. And so both the sects were represented, and there was this religious head sitting stark naked on the stage. And there was this 200,000 audience ahead of us. So then, and there was Muni Sushil Kumar and Sant Kripal Singh. And then my turn came to speak, and I spoke about, they all believed that I was speaking about Zoroastrianism and about Zarathustra, and I told them about Zarathustra, and I said that, and that I had news for them, that Zarathustra had taken birth again. And today, we have in our midst Meher Baba, God in human form. The moment I said this, three people jumped on me. One of them tried to tear my clothes away, one of them tried to pull my trousers off, one of them physically assaulted me. And at that very moment, that 45-minute speech went black. Everything vanished from my head. Baba situation. So Sant Kripal Singh, he looked back and said, "Let the young man be." So they, all three of them, sat down. And I composed myself, and I stood up, and I continued, and I said, in true Hitlerian fashion, I said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I have just uttered the name of Meher Baba. There are people here who oppose the truth, who don't want me to speak about him. Those who wish that I speak about him, by a show of hands, tell me whether I should continue. And if you don't want me to continue, I will walk away from the stage." So I put it to the vote. And in a situation like this, this Baba simply just gives you a tremendous amount of strength. I mean, you could virtually be killed and nothing would happen to you. It's virtually that situation. And there was a show of hands and people shouted, "Meher Baba, Meher Baba, Meher Baba." Thousands and thousands of people, 200,000 people shouting Meher Baba. So I just started talking about Meher Baba's life. Meher Baba was born in 1894, and just started talking about Meher Baba's life. And and then I shouted, "Jai Baba." So people responded with "Jai Baba." And Sant Kripal Singh called me. And he said, "Young man, I have a lot of work for you." So I said, "Any work in the domain of Meher Baba, I'm willing to do." So this happened. Then that was the last day of the conference, and that evening the head priest of the Parsis was to give a talk at the Zoroastrian Association in New Delhi, and he had come in from Bombay, and he was giving a talk on Zoroastrian influence on the Indus Valley civilization and things like that. Now it so happened that the president of the association, the entire Zoroastrian community in Delhi, the president of that association, was married to a cousin of my my mother's cousin, and her father in the 30s had been one of the most violent antagonists, opponents of Meher Baba, along with Colonel M.S. Irani, the same initial as Baba, who was Meramai's mother's brother. So he, his daughter, also anti-Baba. And are you not feeling well? So so she said, "What are you doing this evening? Why don't we have dinner?" And I said, "Fine, let's go and have dinner." And in the evening, we had dinner, and then the husband suggested, "Why don't we have Nauchiwan give his impressions of the conference this evening?" And so she said, "Look, he's going to talk about Meher Baba and you'll be in trouble. So let's just keep him off." So I said, "Look, I'm free. I have nothing to do. I'll come along with you this evening and I'll hear the man talk." And I was not on the schedule. That evening, the man spoke, the head priest, and there was this huge audience. And then there was a little bit of time. So the president stood up and said, "We have a young man here who attended the conference, we'd like to hear his impressions of the conference." So, of course, I gave impressions of the conference where I spoke about Baba. At the end, actually, Baba enjoyed these stories, and that's why I'm sharing them with you. And when Baba called me and I narrated this to him. So, this man at the end of my talk stood up and said, "Mr. President, may I have a word? Could I come to the rostrum and say a few words?" He says, "Yes, sir, yes, please come in." "Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to read Paul Brunton's Search in Secret India, and that's all." And he walked out of the auditorium. He just walked out in protest. Yes. So I stood up and I apologized profusely for the situation. I felt terrible about it. And then we all moved to tea, and then everyone wanted to know, when is Baba, when will we be able to see him, when is he in seclusion, when is he going to give darshan, and everything about Baba. Soon after, I went back to Dehradun, and Baba, I wrote a little account of my stay in Delhi and of my encounters with these various people. Of course, at the conference, Sant Kripal Singh's men tried to cause a lot of damage to all the Baba people by they sort of vanished all my pamphlets. I had kept them in safekeeping and I didn't find them. The entire bag was lost. And all kinds of things happened after this incident. But Baba then called me over to Pune. And this was a very, very special meeting for me for a number of events that happened. My last meeting with Baba was 40 days before he dropped his body. But this was in May 4th, 1966. The Sahavas had just got over, and this was for a special meeting that I was called. There were two meetings at this. There were, of course, several meetings on that day, but I participated in two separate different situations. So the first meeting was, as I went, my father was also there because he was one of the volunteers at the Sahavas, so he was also there. And as soon as I landed there, Irich was there. And you know, before you go to meet Baba, you have all these thoughts in your mind. What am I going to say to him? What am I going to do? What am I going to talk? But he smooths it all out when you come in his presence, because you just totally relaxed, and he'll talk about how you slept and what you ate, did you have a good breakfast, and you're at ease. So I Baba was in the chair and I sat right near his feet. And he embraced me as soon as I walked in. There was a Mandi sitting against the wall. And he asked me to narrate the entire story of what had happened at this conference. So I did that. I started in Gujarati, and then he said, "Look, Francis can't understand Gujarati, you speak in English." So I spoke in English. Because with Baba, he talks to you in Gujarati, and then suddenly you discover that you're not talking, but you're through science. You're trying to explain him through science. And he should tell you, "But you can talk." You have this very funny situation sometimes with Baba, where you're also trying to explain through gestures. And then at the end of it, at the end of my narration, my mind, the way it functions and the way it works, I said, I play a little small trick with Baba. Fortunately, he fell for it. And I said, "Baba, at this conference, I could answer all questions." There was one little question that escaped me all the time. He said, what question? So I said, "See, he had told me in the letter, no questions. Because he knows, he knew my mind all the time. My mind is always full of questions." So he had specifically written, "No questions." So I said, "Now, I'll have to just trick him into one." And I said, "Baba, I could answer all the questions, but this one in particular. How can Mer Baba say he's God in human form?" And Baba said, "You are God in human form. Erich, Francis, each one of you are God in human form. I am conscious of my divinity. My job, my work, is to make you conscious of the divinity which is you." He explained it so beautifully to me at that time. He said, "If you went down to the ant and said you were man, the ant would disbelieve you. If you became the size of an ant, the ant would say, 'You're not a man, I don't believe you.' Suppose you went as ant, but you had a consciousness of man, and you said, 'No, I should have said the other thing, that as in that consciousness, in the consciousness of a man, if you were an ant, and you said that I'm a man, the ant would disbelieve you. But similarly, in my situation where I am God, but I have to give you the conviction, and that is all I give you. The conviction to know that I am God in human form. If you want proof, I cannot give it to you. All I can give you is the conviction. And how will you get that conviction? By loving me more and more. It's as simple as that. You can get that conviction by loving me more and more." Then he asked me to read the God Speaks and the forms of conviction, the Ilmul Yaqeen and Haqlul Yaqeen and things like that. And then we were sitting and Baba said, Do you want to do something? Can you tell me a joke?" And my mind was blank. I was thinking of all kinds of other things. And I said, "I can't think of a joke." But I said, "Could I play the mouth organ?" He said, "Yes, I have the mouth organ in my pocket." So I started playing the mouth organ like wild and just wouldn't stop playing. Till Baba, I mean, I thought that Baba would, but Baba didn't stop me from playing. And Mera and Mani, Baba called them, they stood behind the door. And Mera sent a request saying, "Could I play Swanee River?" And I said, I couldn't play that. So I just kept on playing, and after that, suddenly Baba asked somebody, "Do you love me?" He said, "Yes, Baba." And then he asked somebody else, he says, "Do you accept me as God in human form?" He said, "Absolutely, Baba." And then I would play, or somebody else would say a joke, and Baba would ask Francis, "Francis, what do you think of Moshe Wan's English?"
"Baba, lovely. You know, very good English, Baba."
"You know, Francis." And Baba would really puff you up, make you feel good. And Baba said, "Have you read, Francis, have you read his poems? Aren't they beautiful?" He said, "Yes, Baba. And they're from the heart. And you help him with his poems." And Francis must have said to himself, "I've had it." So, because that's what later on happened after we stepped out, and I said, "Francis, well, you know, Milton, first thing you do is throw Milton over the precipice." So that was Francis, but anyway. Suddenly Baba said, "Do you accept me as God in human form?" I was a little taken aback because all this was going on, and I said, "Absolutely, Baba." And he did a very strange thing. He put his hand forward, and I stretched out my hand, and we held each other's hand. And he said, "I give you the mandate to tell the world that I am God in human form." It's a very serious moment. Total silence in the room. And I, of course, took it extremely seriously, and I take it very seriously to this day. And that is why, at no place, at any time, at that moment, Baba totally eliminated from me fear and worry. That is something that Baba gives to his lovers. He totally eliminates fear. You've got to believe it. In the worst of situations, he will create that situation. He will give you the force, the energy, the stamina, the dynamism to do it, provided you leave the results to him. Sorry. Provided you leave the results to him. And since that day, not that I don't think about a certain situation. We had some years back, we had to come to the United States in a traumatic situation, of my son's illness. But that story is a total miracle. Not for one moment did Meher Baba let me think that my child was on the threshold of death. Not one moment. Would you like to hear the story? It's kind of encouraging. Of course, I think I'll narrate that at the end. I had sent a ghazal a few days earlier to Baba, and he said, "Why, I haven't had the time because of the sarvas to read the ghazal. Why don't you read the ghazal to Baba," which I had composed. It was called The Perfect Man, but it's in, if you like, at the end of this time, I'll read it out to you, and then Baba explained a couple of words from the ghazal to me, what it's the significance of the word that I had used. So, talking about, I'll mention it very briefly, but I'll tell you the way Meher Baba works in our life situations.